Hello, and welcome to the Risk and Accounting Advisory Podcast. I'm Neil Begin, Risk Advisory Leader here at Cherry Beckert. And today on our podcast, we are going to talk about the concept of offshoring and some considerations for companies considering whether to use the offshore ability of their service providers. While most of the discussion will be around informing the Chief Audit Executive about how a service provider goes about offshoring, we believe that to the extent an internal audit department wants to stand up their own internal offshoring model, a lot of what we are going to cover will still be applicable. With me today are two of my favorite practitioners in Cherry Beckert's risk advisory practice. They've joined me on numerous podcasts previously, Mr. Gareth Montague-Smith and Peyton Black, both that actually have extensive experience with offshoring, really from both sides of the table, having been in the CAE role or acting in a CAE role previously. And really, besides having both of them here, what I'm most excited about facilitating this podcast is that Gareth, you know, in one of those former lives, he used to provide Peyton, who was a formal internal audit director himself, with assistance regarding various staffing models, including offshoring. So this is not only a podcast full of conceptual thoughts, but actually field tested. Also of note is that many of the concepts that we're going to discuss today actually apply to onshoring and the concepts of co-sourcing and or outsourcing there as well, a topic which we will cover on a future podcast. So gentlemen, before we get started, just wanted to thank you in advance for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil.
All right, Gareth, let's start with you. Very simply put, we're going to try and keep this to our normal five questions. And so the first one today we're going to start with is, why should companies consider offshoring and what are the real benefits from a service provider's perspective of offshoring?
So as companies and internal departments are increasingly being asked to do more with less, commonly thrown out solution is to offshore the work. And with everything in life, there are pros and cons, and then also some best practices around that can be implemented. I think the two main benefits have to be cost and timeliness. From a cost perspective, we can deliver work at a much lower rate, which can either be passed onto the client in savings and assuming Peyton's not listening to this, increases my own internal profitability. In terms of timeliness, depending on the geographic location of your offshore model, you could potentially have teams working on the project around the clock. And depending too on the model, have a number of folks work on the project simultaneously, recognizing that a lot of our projects are not straight line 1/12 per month over a year. If you take a step back and think about a co-source model in general, it gives us the flexibility to manage resources. I've often heard it likened to a tap. You can turn it on, off, and or increase the resources and very quickly. So it can be super creative to your business if it's done correctly.
Agreed. Absolutely. And Peyton, I'm going to come to you. And from a service provider's perspective, or, you know, the internal audit shop, what are some of the more important considerations folks should think about when they are considering the option to offshore some of their internal audit functionality?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you need to decide what is the ultimate objective. If the ultimate objective is cost, then an obvious place to start would be to shift the SOX testing. You know, think about your larger populations of testing, 25 samples, et cetera. They make low hanging fruit. Typically, high volume and low risk control testing, which don't often do much to train your own internal team or may not even appeal to them. They don't want to do that stuff. Are really good tasks to outsource in general. You know, another consideration is how the service provider sets up the review of the deliverables. In some instances, the work gets performed by offshore staff, is then reviewed by an offshore manager, and then again by an onshore manager, which if you think about it, either costs me more money, not maybe what I wanted, or certainly can add days into the review process given the internal back and forth of the review coupled with the various time zones.
Yeah, now I appreciate you actually addressing some concerns up front to make sure that this podcast isn't just, you know, an outward advertisement to offshore as much as possible. So Gareth, you know, thoughts on any of the concerns you just heard Peyton mention?
Yeah, so I certainly agree with the high volume comment, that sort of low-lying fruit. But from a service provider, the firms are investing a lot into the quality and education of our offshore teams. And we've really seen the capabilities in terms of being able to understand and test more complex areas continue to evolve. A good example of this is using offshore resources to conduct walkthroughs or tested design, a concept that pre-COVID was almost considered impossible. Oftentimes, they were historically done by phone calls and interviews that way, and it was very difficult for the folks on the other end of the call to identify who said what. Although with the increased usage of Teams and Zoom, that's become easier, and the necessity of remote work, we did get it done. One potential solution that we use, and I consider it a best practice, and obviously you need all the participants of any call to consent, would be to record the session. That way you can play back the conversation, even take screenshots of information that was shared when documenting the walkthrough. So this allows the potential to use offshore resources to do that documentation and have those recordings. So we do get a lot more grace and freedom these days. Stepping away from SOX though for a minute, we've also seen an increase in capabilities in offshoring, be it in presentations, responses to RFPs, status updates, more recently data analytics and company research and analysis. Additionally, many offshore teams now have the capabilities to provide assistance with operational audit, including data analytics tools. In terms of Payton's comments on the levels of review, I think it's a deliberate decision between the client and the service provider on what levels of review the client wants and how that is passed on cost-wise. To me, it depends on the onshore resources, skills, the project tasks, and availability.
Hey, Gareth, let me jump in here for a sec and add an example. I think it's relevant from working with you in our previous lives, as Neil mentioned at the start. So in the CAE role, I was using Gareth's team for a variety of projects when the updated COSO 2013 framework came out. And we used his offshore team to assist us in mapping all the new principles to our existing control framework. So their offshore team actually had a lot of experience doing this with other clients already, more so than their local team that we were using. So it really made sense from both a capabilities perspective and a cost perspective. The local onshore manager on Gareth's team, who I regularly work with, performed a review. She knew my style. So when it got to me, it was basically turnkey.
Interesting. And so Payton, in that role as a former chief audit executive, what does offshoring mean to you in terms of actual delivery?
Yeah, and obviously there's an element of cost, as we mentioned, which I think is always the case, particularly around heavy testing areas, like SOX. So efficiency is really important. But to me, at the end of the day, I don't really have a preference on who does the work and where, but I do care about the quality of the work. One of the biggest knocks on offshoring is the quality of the work. That may or may not be true, but I do want to know who is responsible for the quality of the work. Is it the offshore manager or the onshore manager? Basically, who am I going to hold accountable if things are not going well?
Right.
Definitely this is something that needs to be discussed before starting any project. We had a good outcome of the COSO mapping project with Gareth because we discussed those logistics with his team prior to starting the work. If we had not, maybe it wouldn't have gone so well.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Ironing all that up front in the planning stage, certainly paramount. So Gareth, coming back to you, from a provider's perspective, how do you respond to Payton, and particularly interested in, since you used to do this for Payton, in a former life, as you just mentioned?
So firstly, Neil, to be honest, Payton was a terrible client to work with. No budget, no fees, unrealistic deadlines, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just kidding. But Payton has a good point. You have to manage your offshore model like you'd manage an onshore team. Regular check-ins, review of the work prior to going to the client, maybe with a mix of onshore and offshore review. Remember, in a lot of the models, the offshore team is potentially better educated, most have a master's degree, than potentially your onshore team. But regardless, I think the real issues arise when the instructions from the onshore team to the offshore team are not clear and the requested work is sort of thrown over the proverbial wall. The offshore team needs to have a clear understanding of what's expected, including the format. I like to refer to this discipline as inspect what you expect. In other words, don't wait until the end of the project or when the deliverables are due to check in on format, progress, results, etc. Having spent time working with offshore models too, the offshore team really wants to feel part of the team. They want to understand the client, the risks, the objectives, don't really want to be just a body shop for testing. And again, as a manager, this is an important part of managing any team, as we all get so busy and tend to have that concept of out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, and kudos to you for holding serve there, Gareth, against Payton's tech. All just kidding aside, great discussion. I know we typically keep this to five. I'm going to throw in a bonus question just to give Payton an opportunity to respond here. And Payton, coming to you in the final question, and honestly, Gareth, feel free to jump in too. Anything else you think that is relevant from a pros and cons perspective?
Yeah, I think one thing that I will add that I've enjoyed while working with offshore teams which sometimes people may not care about, but I think as a pro, is the ability to work with folks and get to know and experience their culture.
Sure.
I had an outsourced offshore team over in Hong Kong and China in my previous CAE position, and really enjoyed working with them and seeing the differences and commonalities we shared. I mean, it's something, you know, something to be said about that. It made it, you know, much more interesting.
Sure.
You know, and the last thing I think we also tend to overlook as we focus on reducing costs is that by offshoring, you know, we are potentially taking away work and experiences to learn and understand the process and the company from our own internal teams. So, you know, just something certainly to consider when you're developing your own team or thinking about, you know, kind of offshoring.
Very good point.
And if I could just jump in here while we've got a little bit of airtime left, but one of the things that Peyton and I are particularly passionate about is being able to help brand and coach internal audit departments, having both sat in the seat along with some of our other team members. And we really enjoy the opportunity to help IADs think through their plan and how they want to execute it. For instance, at Cherry Beckett, we have over 100 person team based in Chennai, India, that we use as a firm to facilitate and support our work. And acknowledging again that offshoring works for some and not for others, but we'd certainly love to have a chat with you to see what works for you.
Absolutely. No, and I appreciate that. And thanks, Peyton and Gareth, both for your insights. Sounds like you really have some unique perspectives from working together on both sides of the table. And I also want to thank, obviously, our audience for listening. There are obviously many considerations when you think about the decision to use offshore resources. And, you know, offshoring sounds like a real opportunity if things are handled correctly and something that folks should spend time thinking about prior to making a decision on their staffing model. Certainly, we welcome any conversations around some of those decisions being made. And for more information on offshoring, SOX compliance, or internal controls, we ask that you visit cbh.com/risk. And as always, please like, share, and subscribe to the Risk and Accounting Advisory Podcast. And thanks so much again for listening.